I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Tom Daly, and this is Made With Love. As a pro diver, I thought I knew all about making the thing you love the thing you do. But en route to the Olympic podium, I found a new passion outside of the pool that helped me unlock my power within it. That passion was knitting. And you may think this sounds bonkers, but I believe knitting made me an Olympic champion. I've since swapped swimming trunks for slip stitches, pikes for patterns, and chlorine for cables. Knitting is a huge part of my life now, and I'm determined to help others do more of what they love too. So each week, a brilliant guest will be joining me to talk about turning passion into purpose, how they've made the thing they love a central part of what they do, and crucially, what lessons they've learned along the way. Hi, it's Tom here. So happy to have you back with me for another episode of Made With Love. Today's guest has changed the game when it comes to the thing she loves. Not only is she the fastest British woman ever, but in 2018, she was also the fastest woman in the world across 200 metres. Dina Asher-Smith was also the first British woman to win a world title in either the 100 or 200 metre sprint. And incredibly, she won the gold in 100, 200 and 4x100 relay at one European Championships. But it's not only on the athletic track that she's blazed a new trail. A Barbie doll has also been made in her likeness. She's modelled on the Paris catwalk, appeared in one of Dave's music videos, and she has a first class degree in history. Dina also has one of the biggest and brightest smiles in sport and a personality to match. We've crossed paths a couple of times and it's always a joy. So I can't wait to get into the nitty gritty with her now. Let's dive in, shall we? If we take it right back to the start of Dina Asher-Smith's career, did you always love running? Like, how did it all start for you?
It started for me with wanting to be an Olympian. I remember watching the Athens Olympics in 2004 and seeing Kelly Holmes do really well. And I just kind of was like, I was eight. So I was like, what's that? And I was asking my parents and they were describing the concept of the Olympics and then like elite sport and all of that. And I just really fell in love with the idea of like every few years, the best in the world at something get together and they just see who's the best. I've always been like uber competitive, one of those people. So to me, I just thought that was really fun. And I didn't quite know what I wanted to do. I just knew that I was sporty and I tried loads of things, but I wanted to like try and go to the Olympics. So when I was younger, I was like swimming. I did board diving. I was, no, wow. It was fun, but it wasn't for me.
Okay, I'll let you off.
No, I really enjoyed it. I did it with one of my best friends, Sophie. We did springboard. We did like the 5 and the 10. I remember I stopped when we got to the bit where we had to do a handstand. And then,
So you got
off.
Quite far
no,
in diving.
We did. Wow. And Sophie and I, we were just like, when we started to have to do like handstands against the wall for like a while, I was like, you know what, mate, my head hurts, this is hard.
tell me about it. I spent my whole life doing handstands.
I was like, I'm upside down for a long time, you know what, this might be the end for me.
Yeah, thing is, when you say about watching Kelly Holmes in 2004, my start to diving was very similar with that. I remember watching the Athens 2004 Olympics, watching Leon Taylor and Peter Waterfield in the diving. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to win an Olympic medal. I want to go to the Olympics. And it's one of those things that you do it at the beginning and it's all very fun. And you really love the social aspect to it as well. Like, what was it about running that drew you away from sports like diving?
I used to do loads. I think it was more sprinting. I really enjoyed like the idea that the gun goes and you just give it your absolute all. Like, of course, there's things to think about. There's things that you've got to get right, and it is very precise. But I remember I did cross country. There was no like mud and cold and pacing yourself. Oh, no, not for me. But yeah, I just love the idea that when it's time to go, like, you really just have to give it your all. And like, there's nowhere to hide with sprinting. So if you haven't done the work, you haven't done the training, or you get something wrong, you can very much see it. And I think there's almost something very honest to kind of having a sport like that. And I just really liked it. Like, and I found out that I was quite fast. And I was fortunate enough to, when I was younger, be in just like a really nice, friendly environment for young athletes, where you'd come when you were younger, it was about the social, it was about turning up and having a chat with your friends, trying out all the events, doing the different stuff. But then the next thing, in like 6 months' time, next thing you find out, oh my gosh, I'm actually really fast now. Then you're like, oh, wait, okay, I'm going to do London Youth Games. It's like, okay, I'm going to represent my county. And it's like, okay, I made the country team. But I was just having a lot of fun with training. So that's how I really got into it.
I also think back to primary school when we used to do like sports days and things like that. It must have been like a very surreal thing that all of a sudden you were doing sports days and you're like, go, and you're like already at the other end of the field. And was it like that, or was it a bit more balanced when you were really young?
I think like I was always quick, but I do remember like there was other quick people in my primary school. So it wasn't necessarily like, oh, about me. I went for quite a, yeah, I think there was quite a few people that were like half decent. So it wasn't just me. So sports day was like more of a genuinely competitive affair, I think.
Yeah. I also think there was a moment in my diving career where I remember very distinctly that it changed from like an after-school club that was kind of fun and I enjoyed, to it becoming a serious, like, oh, I'm actually quite good at this. And I think I could actually maybe become an Olympian and not just be a dream. It could actually be a reality. Is there a distinct moment in your career where, you know, that switch flipped for you?
Yeah, I think mine was actually quite late. So my flip switched, ironically, when I was already a junior international. I was already a professional, like I already had sponsors and stuff. And it was only when I went to the Moscow World Championships when I was like 17 and we came away with a relay medal. Then I was nominated for Young Spotty and stuff like that. And up until that point, I'd always seen track and field as something that was great and I loved, but something that would hopefully like springboard me into other stuff, like maybe going to the uni that I wanted to go to, or like opening other doors in that way. But when, yeah, I started to be seen at, I guess, a different level, and I started to do stuff that really, in the nicest way, kind of hadn't really been done, weren't that common to do, or hadn't really been done before, I kind of talked to myself and was like, you know, if you apply yourself, you really could make this a career. And it wasn't necessarily that I didn't think I was good. It's just, it's truly so hard to make a career out of track and field. Like, there are so many phenomenal athletes that like are infinitely talented, work so hard, but unless you're like 1, 2, 3 in the entire world, there's like not a living to be made. So it was always like, do you think you can make it when it comes to the seniors, to be like one of the fastest women of all time? And so that did take, understandably, a bit longer.
Yeah.
I mean, to see.
It's also such a flex to be able to say that you're like the fastest woman in Britain. Like, that's like, that is, you could like challenge any person that you see to a race and you're going to beat him. Like, that must be, that's like, that's a pretty epic thing to be able to say. I mean, like with diving, it's like, you know, oh yeah, maybe I'm good at diving, but like challenging people to diving, it's like not everybody knows how to do it, but everybody knows how to run. So
yeah, everybody does know how to run. It's quite universal. Yeah. To be fair, it's quite cool. I think mainly the thing that normally is in my mind is like, you know what, if I'm ever in trouble, I can always run. I can always run. I've always got an escape route. It's okay. Like, if I run, I'm probably going to get away and we're going to be fine.
Yeah, that's good news. Like, no matter what trouble you get into, you're off. You're out of
there. Yeah, I'm
you
like, can, look, I'm gone. Yeah, like, you can sort this out. I'm bye.
I love that. And you talked a little bit earlier about getting into the schools that you wanted to get into and all of that. And I know for me growing up, it was really important to have the balance of a normal as it can be, life with school and working hard on that, making sure you get your GCSEs you want and the A-levels you want. Because I always wanted to have something to fall back on. Like, was that something that you found to be extremely important? Because I know you did very well in your GCSEs and A-levels. And you got into a lovely university too.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it was something that was very important to me. Yeah, as kind of like a fallback, because primarily because that's how I saw my life at first. I didn't always know that I was going to be able to be as good as I wanted to be in track and field. And also, as a person, it kind of just helps, I think. Sport is so fickle, and whether that is your flavour of the month and then you're not so popular the next month, or you step off the curb and you twist your ankle and you fractured it, God forbid, in like 65 billion places, and then you can never run again. You just never know when your last race is going to be. But if you know that there's more to you than just the sport that you do, then I think it does kind of give you a little bit of confidence, as a human being, being like, I choose to do this because I'm good at it and I like it, but it's not all that I am. And I think in turn that kind of makes you a more confident athlete. But also it's just me, like, you know, you just got to mix it up.
Did you find it a help or a hindrance to have school and sport and being able to juggle it all? Was it something that it was a good escape, or was it just a challenge all the time?
I think it was definitely very challenging, but I think I wouldn't change doing it at all. I think definitely like doing my degree and like not splitting it and just kind of going in, it was definitely challenging. That's probably the bit towards the end of that. I'm thinking of my final year at uni, which was like, I went to Rio and stuff and did like 2 world championships whilst I was at uni and indoors and stuff like that. So that was definitely challenging to balance that, and like mainly your stress levels and performing well in both aspects is very challenging. But again, it's something that I don't think I would change. I do know that it's simply not for everybody. So that's why I don't ever just blanket tell everybody, oh yeah, go and do it, because everybody's different. But I think definitely it teaches you how to multitask, to time manage, to prioritize, and just all those key skills that unfortunately in adulthood we all need.
Sport is what teaches you that, though, right? Honestly. Those, like, you learn so much from sport with, like you're saying, the time management, the goal setting, the being able to like stay focused on one thing at a time, but then be able to do other things. And you studied history. Right?
Yeah.
That's pretty, like, what made you choose history?
I think I chose history because I realized that I could study anything I wanted, because history basically is just like anything that happened like yesterday backwards.
Yes.
So I can literally just do anything. So if you want to like specialize in more legal history or medical history or this and that, you can find your way through uni and do that, and then you can convert to something else. So it was still quite an open book to do. But I also found it very interesting just looking at, I think to understand like the future and where we're going, you have to understand where we've come from. And I also know that I had, at this time when I was signing up for uni, I had so many friends from around the world and so many different cultures. And it kind of just opened my eyes to wanting to know more about the world itself and just what other people have been through, what other people's perspectives on life were. And I thought that, history was a great place to do that. And I loved it. Like, wouldn't change that at all.
I love that. And you did your dissertation on, is it the history of jazz music? Is that?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. So I did my dissertation in, oh my gosh. So I focused on, it's kind of like branding, but with jazz throughout history. It was very complex, actually. Well, I mean, say complex, but I'm going to explain it like one line.
It's great. That's something that's a good way to explain it.
But I focused on the brands or like commercial images of like Duke Ellington and Louis Armstrong, because they're both remembered by like modern day people in like very specific ways. And I wanted to look at whether that was accurate to who they were at the time. And if not, why? And how do we remember? And how do we think, like, those influential jazz figures of the past, how much control do we give that person over their brand image, and whether it was made for them, whether it was accurate? And it was very cool.
Do you have any musical ability? Like when
I used to play the trumpet.
Oh, wow.
And euphonium. I wasn't great. It might be a while, but like, I wasn't great. The day that I quit, my parents were like, thank God.
I'm waiting for the day when my son wants to do a musical instrument, and it's just like, as long as it's not if it's the drums, it's just going to be constant drumming and that, like, you know, pick your instruments, I'd say.
That's what my parents did. They're like, pick your instruments. And I think they expected like keyboard, piano, flute. I was like, tuba. They were like, what the hell? They were both just like, are you sure? And then they wouldn't let me practice that much because it was quite annoying. And I was like, I'm kind of shit now. And then they were just like, yeah, okay. But
I love that. I love that your parents allowed you to like explore so many different things, whether it's sport, whether it's music. And what was your relationship like with your parents growing up? And what was their stance on it all?
I think obviously as you get older, you just become more reflective on like the upbringing that you had, whether for better or worse. But I am infinitely grateful that I did have the parents that I had, mainly because my parents have always said the most valuable thing that they can give me is time. So it's not necessarily money, it's not necessarily all these things, but it's time and wisdom and growth and learning. So we did spend a lot of quality time like with each other. So I did do loads of different clubs. I think I was a very hyperactive kid, so I do still think that they used to put me in sports clubs to like kill, like, you know, when you get home and they're like, great, you're exhausted, dinner, bed.
Yes.
Yeah, because I used to dance and do all these kind of things. But I also used to like play mini golf in the garden, like with my dad, and like play hockey in front of the house with my mum, and just they always be racing me, and also like just making sure, just extracurricular wise, I just had every opportunity, because I think, yeah, they believed in time and they were very grateful that they could provide those opportunities for me. So they didn't take it for granted at all.
Yeah, I know, that's really, it reminds me of like my dad and that, like that support. And that now being a parent, I realize how much time and energy and effort that like our parents like dedicated to our sporting career, because it's not just as simple as dropping you off, there you go, off you go. It's like all of the things that go into it, the travel to competitions, the travel to events, the training, all of the food and the, like, it's
the equipment and standing in the cold waiting for you to be done, mm-hmm. and making sure that you've got hotels overnight everywhere. Like, it is very much a very big lifestyle still, while like maintaining a home and making sure that you've got your homework here on time and this and that, and you remember the friends' names and you remember the birthday present for here, you know, like all these, yeah. just little things. And it is just, it's like having three jobs at once, then like whatever job you have on top of that. So yeah, I'm infinitely grateful for just all the effort and time that they kind of put into me.
Now, you grew up in London, you were born and bred in London, right? How was the experience of having an Olympic Games come to your hometown, essentially? Like, what was your, any of your memories from London 2012?
It was phenomenal. I remember I was a kit carrier, because my local athletics club, 2012, they wanted to make sure like the young people got to be part of it. So like loads of clubs got to help and volunteer. So my club got it. And I was like, look, I'm going.
Yes.
So yeah, we were kit carriers for many events, and we managed to kit carry on Super Saturday, which was special. I know, especially for track and field. We were literally trackside when all of that was going on. And I still, to this day, I've never heard anything so loud in my life as being inside the stadium that day. Like, it was insane. And it was kind of like, I think that was about the year before I had that moment of, oh, I could do this. So I was already like a junior international, but like I was still like, you know, school, uni, kind of just see where it goes. And I was really inspired, definitely inspired by like what was happening on track and what was happening in front of me, but mainly inspired by being in London. Everybody has a memory of London 2012. Everybody was affected by it, whether they knew the athletes or not, whether they liked sport or not. They all kind of remember being moved by moments that they saw. And if it's Super Saturday, everybody in the stadium, some people were crying, some people were doing all these things. And I just saw that if you work hard and dedicate yourself as an athlete with, fortunately, the talents that you've been kind of given, you can really create some really powerful memories for people. You can inspire people, and you can, like, I know it sounds a bit soppy, but you can really make people smile and you can give them a moment. And I think that's a very unique opportunity to some industries. Yeah, that's what really pushed me on, I think.
I think that's the beauty of sport as well, isn't it? That it kind of like goes above all kind of like political divides, no matter what country you're from, wherever you like, you, there is always a memory around sport that you can get behind, and certain sporting moments where you're like, oh, I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing. And to be there as a kit carrier and then to think that the next Olympic Games, you can like, then the next, yeah. Olympic Games, and then am I going to be at the next Olympic Games? It's, mm-hmm. all of those little things that can give you those little moments of inspiration to have been able to be inside it already is pretty awesome. And I know you've been with the same coach since you first started. Is that, yeah. correct?
Yeah, we had a period where like I was with a different one, but like I didn't really leave. They're all still in communication and blah, blah, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You got like kind of passed around a bit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, like I literally, all right. No, I'm joking. I'm like, chill out.
But well, no,
like
diving.
Same track, just like a different group. And like he was still like very much involved. But yeah, pretty much been under his influence, I would say, since I was 8 years old.
Like, how do you keep it fresh? Because for me, when I was with the same coach, I almost got too comfortable with my coach. And then I got to a point where I was having these moments where, like, I didn't quite know when I could push back, when I could say, yes, this is a good thing, this is not. And it all became a little bit stale. What is the key to a great coach-athlete relationship?
I think it definitely depends on just the coach self. Like, I'm really fortunate that I know my coach John really, really well, and we have a good relationship where I think we both respect each other's voices, because sometimes I'm just like, I want this to change, and then he'll think about it, like, and then do it, or he'll think about it critically and come back and be like, I hear you, this is the reason why we do this, but like, if you want to we can investigate this. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's always a dialogue, there's always a way to just evolve, and I think that's the most important thing, because at the end of the day, particularly, I mean, we're both in individual sports, but definitely coming from sprinting, like, you always have to find a way to just get the best out of yourself. So that is, yes, making sure that you're as fast as you can be, as strong as you can be, or and you're as physically optimized and efficient as possible, but also mentally you have to be happy, you have to be motivated, you have to be focused, and you just have to be kind of firing on all cylinders. And I've just always been grateful that John really gets that. Yeah, and he just listens, really. Yeah, I've known him for so long, I don't think anything's ever like out of bounds. It's just respectful, I think. So yeah, we really get along.
And what is it that, like, while you're training, that keeps you happy? Because I know, like, from my past experience, you know, there's days where you want to get up and get to it, and there's days where you know it's going to be difficult, but you get up anyway. What is it that keeps you going and keeps you in that happy place?
You know what? I think I'm really strange. I always get asked this question, but I sometimes, and I'm not saying it's like the most healthy thing, I'm just being honest, I just see it as like something I've got to do. Like, I love to race, I love the adrenaline rush, so I just don't, I listen to my body and how I feel, because if my body's not feeling it, then, you know, ultimately that's a no. But I don't always consult how I feel about doing stuff, because I've just seen, like, if you do the hard work, you do the sessions, you do the precision, you stay focused. If John wants me to, I don't know, get like a little bit more off the ground, or this earlier, or move my arm, or whatever he wants me to do, I just do it. And I just don't think, like, I think we do all have days when we're like, oh yeah, I'd much rather like be on a beach right now. Like, I think, I think 99% of people, but it's just like, if you want to be the best and you know what it takes, then just get on with it. That's the way I see it. I'm not really much of like a big like complainer, I don't think. So yeah, I just think I'm quite naturally motivated, maybe. But I think the honest answer is I just don't check in that often.
I completely get you, because I've had a similar experience, because when you're in that training mode, you realize all those little 1% that you're doing that maybe other people aren't, those 1% add up, and then all of a sudden you start making those moves forwards. And I know that you had one year in particular where you broke so many records and you won the hat trick at the European Championship, and it was just a year that I feel like was quite defining in your career. But like, how did you have the mindset to be able to switch it up a gear, if you like?
I remember before that, it was quite interesting, because the year before that was my final year at uni. So that was like the first year that I was ever like not studying and actually being a pro athlete. Yeah. And the year before, I broke my foot. And that was probably one of the most challenging things that I've had to like overcome, simply because I had to finish, I was doing my dissertation, I was doing all these things. And I did break my foot like quite badly, had surgery, got screws in it. And that was 5 months before the World Championships. And I remember that loads of people were like, just forget about it, like, you're not going. Not in a rude way, but it's just like, no. And I was like, well, I want to try, because the World Championships were in London. And not only did we make it, but I like came fourth. It still burns me. It came fourth in London World Championships by like 0.08 of a second, which burns, considering like I didn't run for like however many months. And then we got a silver in the relay, which was cool. But I just remember coming off that and being like, Dina, you did that. And you like literally genuinely were in a boot for like most of the year. It's one of those things where it's like, you genuinely can do like very amazing stuff, but like, just hopefully you'll get a break and you won't break your foot again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also, it's sometimes it's just like believing in yourself and having that little extra bit of self-belief. And I remember that European year, I actually went to Commonwealth Games like a few months before in Australia, and I did well, but like obviously we were peaking for the Europeans later in the summer. Other people were able to target that. So you do like not run as fast as some other people at that moment because that's not the moment you've prioritized in the year. But I remember just being so frustrated and like rolling my eyes and being like, oh my gosh, like, yeah. So I was really pushing through into Munich, and I was grateful that it kind of, yeah, worked out.
Very well.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess it always comes back to that, like the body achieves what the mind believes in a way.
100%.
Like if you're injured, you take the time to spend time on visualization and other mobility things that you don't necessarily have the,
have the time for.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Would you be able to take me through what it feels like just before you start a race when you're like approaching the start blocks? Because it, for me, it looks like it's like a really intense and everybody's like peacocking. Everyone's like doing all these things. Like, how is that?
For me, it's my favorite part.
Okay.
It's like, yeah, it's like because I always know that I've done the work, I've done the training, I'm very precise and I'm very focused. It's one of those moments where it's just like, let's just go and do it. And particularly in a major championships, like I really love major championships. It's just something that I'm really good at. I'm really good at like running the three rounds and kind of pacing myself, negotiating my way through. And it's just something that I find really fun. Whenever I step onto the line, I just think it's, yeah, it's thrilling. It's kind of like, you know, people always talk beforehand. Do you know what I mean? Like with everything, people always like talk and they say things. There's always people that have said something, acted some kind of way or whatever. And it's like the talking's like done. Like you can't hide from the clock. So it's like when the gun goes, everybody might have said or they believe that they've done the work, they believe they've done the training. But like if you can't do it in that moment, it doesn't really count. And for me, I just think it's, yeah, it's really exciting. It is quite intense. Not in like a stifling way, I think. In just a very focused way. People are just in that moment doing what they need to do to perform to the best of their ability. And as long as everybody's able to perform to the best of their ability, then, you know, the race is on. So
do you have like a mantra that you go through in your head? Like, is there anything you say to yourself just before the gun goes? And like, or is it as quiet as you can get your mind?
Quiet as you can get your mind for me. And like my coach normally has given me like two or three things to think about like throughout the course of the race, and I'm just thinking about what my coach has told me to focus on, because time and time again I've worked out that even though I might not like it all the time, he tends to be right. So he tends to be right.
Coaches, I know, coaches annoyingly are like that, aren't they? They're like, oh,
things are, it's like if I actually just listen to him and do what he says, I tend to actually win. So the times that I normally just don't do what he says, the times that like he's like, why would you do that, that's not what I said, and now you're not happy. But I just kind of just focus on whatever he's told me and just have faith that I've done the work and I've done everything that I can do to get to the line in the best possible shape. And whatever I put out in the next few seconds is everything I've got. That's all you can do.
That's what my coach always says to me. She always, the funny thing is, she always has very almost running specific cues in a weird way, because she always tells me to stay in my own lane, which is, I guess.
Oh, that's a track thing.
Stay in your lane.
Like, that sounds familiar. Then I'm like, wait, why does it sound familiar? Why is it coming out your mouth?
Exactly. Like, divers don't have any lanes. We're not swimmers. We like, honestly, do all crazy things. But she always says to me, stay in your own lane and just execute, because diving like sprinting in that, you know, if you're in a 100 meter, 200 meter race, it's just you. It's just you and the track. Like anything that anyone else does around you has no impact on what you're doing. And is that something that you've been conscious of trying to like let go of the uncontrollables, if you like?
Yeah, you can't fuss about what you can't control. Like I think John got that out of me pretty early in my career, like, because some people, like, they love to fuss about the weather, like in track, or like where the wind is or what's happening. And it's like, look, if the weather's crap, they're still going to run the race. So just get over it. But yeah, for me, it is just about execution. I know particularly people get bored, particularly with sprinters, when everybody just comes and talks about, oh, yeah, I just wanted to execute, get my race right. But truly, that's the only thing that's going through your head, because you have to get your race plan right, whether it is under pressure, whatever the circumstance, whether the gun goes and the girl in the lane next to you has taken 3 steps and she's a meter in front of you and you're like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
But you've still got to execute your race plan irrespective of whatever is going on around you, what the circumstances leading up to the race has been. Yeah, that's it really, just get it done.
Yes. Are there any like of those techniques that we're talking about there, like in terms of mindset and preparation, that you use not just in sport, but you're able to take them outside of that into your everyday life?
Yeah, like I think sport's given me so many tools for just everyday life. I think attention to detail is one. And making sure that if you've got a job to do, you're doing it properly. Being mindful of your own energy levels and how that influences how you talk to people, how you manage people, and how you interact with people. Because as an athlete, you're always hyper aware of like when you're tired, if you haven't slept as well, or even like, yeah, if you've eaten loads of sugar, if you're a bit more anxious, if you've had coffee or whatever. And I think that that's handy to have that knowledge of yourself when you interact with other people as well. I think it makes you a bit more of a kinder, more mindful human.
Yes.
Yeah, just the mood that I'm in right now might not be reflective of the world, so let's just keep it cute. Let's keep it cute. And then also just kind of being in the moment and being very present, because ultimately, yeah, when you're in elite sport and you've got less than 10 seconds, you've got like 1-2 seconds to make your mark and like potentially change your life. Being present in what's happening with you and right in front of you is essential. And I think particularly in the time of like social media, where there's so many like things going on all the time, distractions, news is always on a constant reel of everything, I think sometimes it's a blessing to be able to just be in the moment and enjoy life for like what it is. And I think that's definitely a skill, yeah, that I've taken from sprinting.
That's something that I think one of the things that I really learned later on in my diving career was being in the moment and staying present, because I used to find going to the Olympics in particularly London 2012 and 2016 for me, where you work so hard for that one moment, and then you want it so badly that you almost torture yourself through the whole experience because you don't want to mess up and you want to get it right.
Yeah, and it's like not fun. I know what you mean, and it's like, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And then you get there and it's normally fine, but then if it doesn't go to plan, you're literally like, I gave everything for this.
Yes.
And you're like, I literally turned every stone I had. Mm-hmm. What went wrong?
Yeah.
And sometimes, ironically, what you need to do is just chill out.
Yeah, totally.
And just
totally.
Chill out and it will go better. Yeah.
Because in 2016, I had a similar moment. I was really happy with how it went with the synchro event. And we got a bronze medal. And then the individual, I thought I was going to win an Olympic gold medal. And it all went to, I didn't even make it to the final. Completely bombed out. Had one of the worst moments in my sporting career. And that was something that was really difficult to come back from. But, you know, as an athlete, you have to learn to be resilient. And every athlete has been through ups and downs and injuries and all kinds of things. Like, has there been other moments? Like, for example, in Tokyo, I know you were injured as well.
And so annoying.
Yeah. I mean, tell me about that.
The ironic thing, it wasn't even like a big one. It was like a fascia injury. I don't know if you like know. It was like tiny. It was just awful timing. It's one of those ones where it's like, if this happened in November, nobody would even, we would just, as a team, it would just be like, oh, okay. Jog for like a week and then get back to it. But obviously when you're in the middle of the season, everything, you're like a Formula One car, everything makes like a really huge difference. But yeah, I truly actually think it took me quite a long time. Like, I tend to bounce back to certain levels kind of fine, but I think like everyone, and I think very much like the pandemic and everything, it made lots of things a lot more difficult. So I think it does sometimes take some time for you to just be like, breathe, reset, and like go again. But I think that is the thing about sport. I mean, there's always another race, there's always another opportunity, and there's always another opportunity to shine. Just because something doesn't go as planned in the moment, it doesn't negate the fact that you've done all the work, that you're very good at what you do, you're talented, and all those general, very important like bullet point headings. It just means in this moment, it kind of sucked, and you can like lick your wounds and then just get on with it. There's always another race. You've got to just keep it moving sometimes and learn what you need to learn so it doesn't happen again. But still, sometimes things are just unfortunate. So just kind of chalk it up to the game and keep it moving.
No, absolutely. I mean, you still got a medal in the relay in Tokyo, which is awesome. Yeah. But because when you are an athlete and you know what you are capable of and what you know that you can do, if you don't quite live up to it, even though like when you look back on this in the future, like I know I now look back at Rio 2016 and think, well, you know what? I still got an Olympic medal. That's still pretty bloody cool. And it's just you don't realize it when you're in that moment because it feels so demoralizing and degrading because it's that 4 years of training or 5 years because of Tokyo.
Five in the pandemic. Honestly, it was grueling. But I think that's why when I'm not competing, I spend so much time in a world that's like with just like my friends from like school and like genuine people that, you know, like me for me, as in like the person rather than just being in this sports bubble all the time. And I spend so much time with like creatives and stuff like that. It's because I think people that come from a different walk of life just really give you a fresh perspective because people are just like, you run really fast. That's super cool. Like, you know?
Yeah.
And in sport, quite rightly, because we all do have these big targets and we all do want to like achieve these big things. But sometimes like when you're in the industry, there's just so much like hinged on these major things. And it's almost like if you don't get it, then it's like, why are you here? Like, do you know what I mean? But like, it's not the reality of the situation. That's just a very kind of unhealthy way of seeing what we do. Like, it's a bit soppy, but like truly what everything is about is all about the process and the journey and just having fun, exploring yourself and seeing where you can take yourself. And if that means like incredible things, amazing times, congratulations. But if it doesn't, and it means moments, it's the countries you've seen, it's the mistakes you've made, it's the laughs you've had along the way, then that is also what it means for you. Because ultimately, this is like a phase of our lives. And I think, me spending a lot of time in different industries gives you a really healthy perspective on like what it means to be an athlete and what it just means to be excellent at something. And you kind of take it all, just a bit lighter. You chill out and you're very much more grateful as well when it really does go according to plan as well.
Yeah, totally. And it was actually something you said to me when we saw each other recently at a Vogue dinner. We were talking about how, like, you know, as an athlete, you kind of you base your self-worth almost on how well you do, and being able to do stuff outside of it is great. And to realize that we are more than just athletes, and there's more to us than how well we've performed. And just some of the things that you do outside of sport, I mean...
No, it's more you than me.
But yeah, but you were talking about me in that instant.
Yeah, I was talking about you.
I know.
We can talk about you. Even though I don't interview me, we can talk about you.
No.
You're about to go red.
No, I am. I'm blushing. I'm like, no. I was about to go on to about all of the amazing fashion stuff that you've done.
Like how... I'm just having fun living my life, you know, Tom.
I know, I'm living my best life. I mean, I haven't set foot on a diving board since Tokyo.
I know, that's what I was saying, honestly, and I'm here for it. Go and enjoy your life. You sacrificed so much for so long. Just go and smile and enjoy it.
It's been a lot, but it's been fun. I mean, it has been fun.
Yeah.
But I mean, I've seen you've been in, you know, music videos with Dave. You've had a Barbie like recreated after you. Like all of these amazing things. Tell me a little bit more about some of your passions outside of being on the track.
Yeah. You know, I think I'm still very much in that process of like still, I don't know, fully learning who I am and what kind of makes me tick. But I do, I really love kind of just the creativity and of the fashion world, I think, mainly because it's not like, for me, it's not just about, oh, what am I wearing? It's not that kind of side of it. But I think maybe coming from something as linear as sport, where it's just like, did you hit the time or not? like what split is this? Like, is this fast or not? Is it good enough or not? Yes or no? And I think that there's something really beautiful in being in an industry, maybe it's more like the arts industry, where you can produce something that you've put like your heart and soul into. And is it everybody's flavor of the month? No. Some people just don't get it, but some people can, even though it might not be something that's for them, they respect and like appreciate your different perspective on something. And I think that like it's just not so black and white. So I really enjoy that world. I love to write. I'd really like to write more, but very much like got a lot in track wise on my plate. So focusing on training right now. And yeah, I'm very keen on just using my voice to make sure that particularly young women have, whether it's coming through sport, understanding their bodies or stuff like that, they have an easier time of it than, well, I mean, I didn't always have a particularly tough time of it, but it's just like, we're making sure that we're serving our young people well, whether that's on track, off track, and with their understanding and their own self-worth and self-esteem. So there's loads of things that I'm into, but you know, as most 20 somethings, I'm also like figuring it out along the way.
I completely understand that form of self-expression through fashion and through creativity and through art. And I've also been loving all of the stuff that you've been doing for like research on into the menstrual cycle as well for athletes. And I think that's something that's really important to be able to do more research into that, to understand what it's like to compete in those stages. And what, tell me a little bit more about what you've been doing to help with that.
Yeah, I think it's just really important that we make sure that if we truly want sports to be equal and we truly want everybody, every single body, as in like everybody's body, to perform to the best of their abilities, then we have to throw ourselves into it and understand fully what it takes for that person to perform. And that's whether they are a man or a woman. And when it comes to women competing in sport, understanding that we're not like little men. You can't like place the same model that, like, some things are interchangeable, but like 99% of the time it's not going to quite work. And I think there are a lot of people, particularly in the elite sphere, that are talking about that more and more, which is great. But I just think, yeah, if you want to make everything equal, then you do truly have to cater for everybody that's doing it. And making sure that the conversation is one that's open and there's not judgment or like, you know, where people go, oh, she's just moaning. It's like, no, it's for some people, this is a really big deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's great. And before we get on to our Made with Love letter that we get to at the end of each podcast, how is your training going right now? Like, how are you feeling towards Paris?
Good. I'm excited. Yeah. It's mad that it's next year. I
know.
Believe it. I actually just think like every year since like 2019 hasn't happened.
I know
it sounds crazy, but I think the pandemic's thrown my sense of guilt off. I was saying like a month ago to some of my friends, I was like, we did like a little girly spa day, so like some of our athlete friends, like it was a lot of fun, and we were like, can you believe it's gonna be Paris next year? They're like, honestly, don't start. Like, emotionally, I'm not done with like being so anxious at Tokyo that like we were gonna test positive before you got in, and like that level of anxiety, like we need still like to release and make sure that we're all okay with that. Yeah, it's mad that it's next year. But yeah, no, training's been going really well. I'm about to start doing indoor soon. So great. I'm really excited. I haven't done indoor for like, in earnest, for like years and years and years. Because yeah, pandemic, focusing on other stuff, blah, 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 blah. And I just really want to try and run some really quick times. Like, I'm very excited. It's been a very good training block for me this winter. So I've just been... yeah, training, living life, doing the great best that I can do.
It's exciting. I'm so excited for you.
And
it's
also, thank you.
Because I think lots of people don't realise, if you're not in the world of sport, is that the hardest thing about the Olympics is getting to the start line.
Oh yeah, 100%. Once you're there, it's just, if you're there and you're in shape, you're just like
just
I can guarantee
it.
Like 80%, okay, this is obviously a stat that it's just off the top of my head, like it's not real.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, please, please, just don't quote it for sure. But like so many people have come into that and just like with various hurdles, whether that's physical hurdles, mental hurdles, life hurdles to kind of overcome. So getting there and getting there in one piece and ready to do your best is such an achievement. Yeah, it just makes it really exciting that it's coming around soon.
Yay.
Yeah.
Great. So at the end of each of the Made with Love podcasts, I ask my guests to say a little letter, say a little speech addressed to somebody, someone, a thing, a place. So I would love to find out who or what or where your letter is addressed to.
My one is actually where I train. So it's a place called Lumen Park. And it was an interesting choice for me because I think you could easily do it like parents, coach, whatever, but like this one's a bit different. But it's in my mind because we recently got like a new multi-million pound facility there. So it's gone from, yeah, they've all worked privately really hard to get it. Like the people at the club, that they wanted to do something for like the young people there for like the last 10 years. And it's amazing that like they're finally getting that. And I probably would say to that and just the whole community that surrounds that, probably a massive thank you, not only from me and who I am and my own development, but also like the hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands of kids that have kind of grown up in that environment. And it's not from a sporting perspective, but I think it's like who you are as a human being. Like it's kind of like this really calm kind of nice place where it's not like a judgment place that you can come, you can mess up, you can trip over. Like the amount of times my coach has said go and like I've gone to run and my shoe's fallen off and I'm just like, oh my god, like so many embarrassing things. But like everything is just really nice. It's a really good vibe, and there it doesn't matter how good you are, like you've got casual runners, you've got Olympians, and everybody's just kind of really friendly and non-judgmental, and it's really nice. And the people that work there are very kind, always willing to go above and beyond just to make sure people have a safe and a good time when they're there. And often it's volunteers as well, so people that aren't necessarily paid. And I think that people like that really do make, not only make the world go round, but also they really help young people realize their dreams. Because if it wasn't for that kind of support and just the selflessness, the parents, the people that give up their weekends and their time to invest in young people, that particularly sports like track and field, they wouldn't have the talent, they wouldn't retain people at all. So probably just thank you to everybody there, because they really do deserve this big new facility. And yeah, and also they deserve to, yeah, just be recognized because they work really hard and it's a really nice environment. And I think it's very special. I've trained across the world. I've done lots of different things, but they've got a very nice environment around there, which really I don't think should be taken for granted. So. Mm-hmm.
Just hearing that is amazing, because good training facilities and having a good team around you makes such a world of difference. And I am so excited to see how it goes in the build up to Paris and beyond, and everything you have inside, on the track, off the track, everything. So Dina Asher-Smith, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to see your next chapter too.
Ooh, see how it goes.
See what you want to do.
Yeah, like who knows? It could be anything. I might be in space before you know it.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be teaching aliens how to knit. I don't know.
Oh, that would be funny.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good.
Yeah, we will see.
Things took a slightly strange turn at the end there, but I really hope you enjoyed that chat with Dina. Her perspective on things is super refreshing, and I find her no-nonsense attitude really inspiring. If you feel the same, don't forget to share this episode with your friends and on socials. I can't quite believe it, but we've now come to the end of Series 1. But don't worry though, after a short break, I'll be back with more wonderful guests talking all things made with love. If you've enjoyed the series, though, please let me know by rating and reviewing the show. It'll really help more people to find this amazing community. As ever, Made With Love was hosted by me, Tom Daly, and produced by Emma Roberts for Spiritland Productions. Our engineer today was Rich Andrews, and our assistant producer is Nadine Peters. Let's catch up in a few weeks when I'll be in New York City, kicking off Series 2 with a massive guest. But until then, make time for the things you love and take care. I'll see you soon.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.